Welcome back to part two of our interview with Amanda Morin. I'm your host, Shantae Snellgrove. Today we're talking about actually going to an IEP meeting and what types of questions to ask in the IEP meeting. I also throw a little curveball and ask Amanda her thoughts on to bring or not to bring cookies to an IEP meeting. If your child is part of the special education system, you know that at some point during the year, you're going to have to attend an IEP meeting. Why then is it every year I, like many of you, feel so overwhelmed when the time approaches? I always feel like I'm reacting versus being proactive. I wanted and needed some help, so I reached out to Amanda Morin. For those of you that might not know, Amanda is an author of the Everything Parents Guide to Special Education, and she is also the in-house expert for Understood.org, a former early childhood educator and a parent advocate. I love the way that Amanda gets it. She is also a special needs mom. She provides a clear understanding, and she breaks it down for the rest of us to understand the various situations or processes, but at the same time, she provides us with takeaways and action steps. And in case you missed part one of our interview with Amanda, you may want to go back and have a listen. We discussed a lot of important information about how parents can prepare for an IEP meeting. And what does being prepared for an IEP look like? And then Amanda also shares tips on ways to organize your IEP binder. Today we're talking about actually attending the IEP meeting and what types of questions to ask. So let's get started. So what types of questions? Okay, so now we're going to go to the meeting. So now we're at the meeting, and I'm going to throw a curveball at you that I didn't discuss, but first we're going to just go through what we did discuss. What types of questions, you know, should you ask during the IEP meeting?
So I think there are multiple questions you should ask. I mean, the first is making sure that everybody who needs to be there is there. So making sure if there haven't been introductions done, and that's usually how an IEP meeting starts, ask for those introductions. You know, who is everybody? How do you know my child? How do you work with my child? And then sort of think through, is there somebody missing here? Is there a report that needs to be discussed that we don't have somebody who can speak to it? Is there somebody here who can make decisions on behalf of the school and, you know, allocate services? Are there teachers here who work with my child every day? So that's the first thing, I think, is make sure you know who everybody is. And I think it's easy enough to start the conversation with, like, hi, I'm Amanda. I'm so-and-so's mother. It's a pleasure to meet you. And I'm there are some faces around this table that I don't recognize. I'd love to know who everybody is. I think
that's great. And that's a good point. And I have a question too. And I know, isn't there supposed to be a head or somebody that's an official that's supposed to be at the meeting too? Sometimes they're acting as proxy or something, but like, isn't there something that we should know, like, who that person is? So that might be good when they're going around the table too.
Definitely. And that's sort of what I was alluding to when I said somebody who can make decisions on behalf of the school.
Okay.
Oftentimes it's an administrator. Sometimes it's actually the director or assistant director of special services. Sometimes it's the principal of the school. Sometimes it's the head special education teacher.
I don't think I've ever had the principal in my IEP meeting, but interesting.
Yeah. So it depends on your school district, but it has to be somebody who's able to say, yes, this is something we are going to provide and we can do. Okay. And that's the whole crux of that.
Okay.
And your child's case manager or special education teacher needs to be there as well.
Right.
And if it's a first meeting, there will be a special education teacher there. It may not be your case manager. And that's, I think, really an important thing to know, is sometimes when it's your first meeting, these may not be the same people who are around the table next time, because you may add people, you may subtract people, but it's sort of the same makeup. So I think that's the first thing, is introductions, definitely.
And maybe just important to note on this too, that you're welcome to invite people to the meeting too, because I think sometimes if you're a new parent, you don't necessarily know that you're allowed to do that.
That's a great point. You can invite people too. There are sort of two buckets that usually falls into, is, you know, somebody that you bring, like, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your support person, a friend, somebody like that. And you can also bring somebody who, what the law calls, has specialized knowledge of your child. So if you have an outside tutor, or if you've had an evaluation done outside of the school and the psychologist or speech therapist or whomever wants to attend, that's another kind of person who you can invite. It's always a good idea to give the school sort of just a heads up, you know, just
who's coming so they can prepare and make sure there's enough room and seats. And yep. I think I learned earlier on through the magazine, another mother had shared that she does assemble a team. And since then, I've assembled a team because I just feel more confident going in there, even if it's the tutor, the behavior specialist, you know, whatever. I feel like I have support, you know, like we're all working towards a goal and it's not just them against me. And not that it's that way. I don't mean it because I think that it is a partnership, but it just shores me up a little, even though my husband does come, but sometimes he's not as intimate.
Right.
Involved as I am with her education. So I appreciate the other people's input. And so anyways, I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, and I think that's like a great point about the us versus them. It can feel that way because these are people that the team, the educational team, work together all the time. So they have a rapport that you may not be a part of.
Right.
So coming in the door with people that you have a rapport, I mean, ultimately you hope you walk out the door and everybody has a rapport and everybody feels like they can work together in the end. But I think you need to start that with feeling confident that you have who you need. And I think a lot of IEP meeting preparation is about feeling competent and confident.
Right.
I think those are the keys. So to go back to questions, so there are all sorts of questions you can ask. I think, excuse me, my chair is sliding here. there are all sorts of questions you can ask. You know, getting a sense of what your child's program looks like already. You know, what is this, what's going on in the classroom? Where are their concerns? Where are there not concerns? What is the present level of performance? How is my child doing in comparison to what you would expect of a child of this age?
Right.
I think it's a question. And I would ask that question that way, as opposed to how's my child doing in comparison to the other kids in the class? Because that's not, it's
say,
not.
Say, repeat it again. Say that one more time so I get it clear.
So, I would very specifically ask, how is my child doing in comparison to what he should be doing at this age?
Okay.
Sort of like the grade level standards.
Right.
As opposed to, how is my child doing in comparison to other kids in the class?
Right.
Because what you're trying to do is compare against grade level standards and get a plan in place that's going to help your child work towards those grade level standards.
I just got goosebumps because that is huge, you guys. I hope everybody takes note of that because that is so huge, Amanda. I mean, you're absolutely right, because as parents, I think we tend to ask, like, well, how is she doing next to that person? But that's not what it's about. It's about how are they doing, in the classroom based on where they're supposed to be, because that's huge, you know. And then sometimes when you realize, oh, they're way behind, how could we catch them up? You know, what steps do we need to take? And that's what the IEP and the goals should be about.
Right.
So,
right. And actually, I will tell you, you know, there's a really exciting, this shows you how special ed wonky I am. There was a really exciting case from the Supreme Court last year, the Andrew F. case, sort of redefined free appropriate public education and really cemented the idea that your child's IEP needs to show that they're making meaningful progress to grade level standards. And I think that's so important for parents to be able to go in and say, I know that there's a new standard here that says, you know, meaningful progress in light of his circumstances. So it's looking at your kid individually in their circumstances, and you have to be able to create a program that shows that he's going to move forward. And that's exciting to me.
I think that's exciting too. I'm thrilled. And all of the college programs that they've put in place, and that they have to get a standard diploma. I mean, modified, but still, it's better than what they've done in years past, you know?
I think as a parent, as parents, it's really our job to make sure that our kids are held to those high expectations. You know, at home, it's hard sometimes, even as a parent, to hold your child to high expectations. But if we're going to do it at home, we should do it at school, too. So that's another thing, is to ask about how your child's present level of performance is doing. And what are we going to do to catch up, right? And that's like the nitty gritty of it. What services need to be in place? What supports? What kind of instruction? What do we need for this wonderful child to catch up, to get on track, you know? And we talk a lot about IEP goals as leveling the playing field, or accommodations and supports as leveling the playing field. Basically, that means putting into place the support your child needs to do as well as the other kids in the class, right?
I love the way that you say that. That is awesome. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. You know, and I think it's important to note that because a lot of times people will talk about fairness and you know, is this fair that your child gets to have access to digital books while another student doesn't have access? And I don't think it's not fair and equal are not the same thing. Right. And I think we need to remember that fair and equal aren't the same. What, you know, we're looking at equal. We're looking at equal access, making sure your child has what they need to do equally as well as other students.
I think that's an excellent point. And I was going to switch up the question, or I have two little questions or two parts of this that I was going to ask in addition to this, because I know we brought up when we're talking about being in the meeting. So this one, I'm going to ask this first and then we'll go into it. But what's your thoughts? Like, I do always bring cookies. I know I've heard other advocates that is ridiculous. It's a business meeting and this is how they feel. And I'm not judging. I'm not saying anything. So I just wondered what your take was on that.
That's such an interesting question because I'm not sure I have a take on it specifically. Okay. It's an interesting question because I think sometimes it depends on your relationship with the team already.
Okay.
You know, I mean, if that's the kind of relationship you have with the team, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I brought coffee, I brought donuts. But if you're uncomfortable, like if you're not sure where you stand, I think it can come across as feeling like I brought you something, now you have to give me something in return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. And I don't necessarily think of it like that, but I used to be in a print business and the print reps used to always bring me stuff. The ones that brought the stuff, I did kind of have a little, I favored them a little bit. So maybe I am trying to get the people to favor me a little bit, but I mean, there's a lot of things I want for my child. So I figure it doesn't hurt if coffee and if you know, I can go to Dunkin' Donuts and get the coffee and a few little donut holes. I mean, I'm like, okay, all for it. So I kind of think of it like that. Like when people I've heard the advocates say, you know, it's not business, but I'm thinking, well, when I was in business, they brought me stuff all the time. So maybe it depends on your business. So anyways, but that was
interesting point. You know, as a former teacher, if somebody brought me coffee and donuts after school or before school, I would love that. I mean, I absolutely would have loved that.
They have a hard time. They have to rush and get. There's so much that they have to do. So that's my take on it, but everybody can do what they feel is best. So,
And I've heard both arguments too, you know, and I think it's really, it's a personal choice. It's really who are you at the core? Is that something you would do anywhere you would go? I would show up at somebody's house. You know, I wouldn't show up empty handed at somebody's house.
I wouldn't show up empty handed. And the other question I want to ask is, so when should you bring your child or have your child start attending the IEP meeting?
So that's a tricky question. I mean, there are answers to that are when your child has to start attending.
Right.
And usually that's when you're starting to talk about transition. So in many states, it's like 14, 15 or 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And you're looking at what are they going to do after high school. But I would say as early as possible, honestly, if you're, you know, I think that there are a couple of things to consider in that. The first is your child doesn't have to stay for an entire IEP meeting.
I think they can just huge.
They can make a guest appearance. you know, this is the guest of honor, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it destigmatizes having an IEP to have your child a part of those conversations. And in the end, you know, I think about as my older one started getting into middle school, we needed his buy-in. We were making decisions about him.
Right.
That he had to follow through on. And so if he wasn't part of those conversations, it was really difficult. You know, I mean, teenagers are difficult in many ways, but it's difficult to say this is what you're going to do in your classroom if they don't have any conversation about it. But I also think it helps, you know, to go back to the point of like building relationships with teams.
Mm-hmm.
To have your child there, I think it really reinforces the idea that you should not be saying anything about a child that you wouldn't say in front of a
mm-hmm.
child. You know, and that's huge to me. And it's something that has convinced me that I should bring my children early on. You know, even my 7-year-old right now, he'll show up at the beginning of the meeting and he'll give a little 5-minute conversation about what's working well for him and what he feels like he needs some help with.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just share too, I did an interview, I don't know, I think about a year ago, and the mother, actually, maybe it was a speaking presentation, and the daughter was speaking, and she said her mother brought her in from the very beginning because she just felt it's about your life. You need to know. And yep. She goes through the story and tells you like about how, a teacher told her she would never amount to anything and make it, you know, and like these heartbreaking things. But I mean, we have, you know, all of us have probably heard certain things like that, but she said she just, when she got her college degree, she went back to the teacher that said it and said, see this, you know, you were wrong. And anyways, but the point was her mother said, I felt it was her education. I wanted her, you know, to be there and not that she understood everything all the way through, but that it's about you and there's things, you know, you were going to have to do in order to get your education right. So now she might have been, you know, everybody's different, but I thought that was an excellent point, like, you know, to bring them in, even if it is for a short time, so they know that it's about them. And then also start maybe as they age, have responsibilities that they have to do towards the meeting, because that would help with self-advocacy as well.
Exactly. That I totally agree with that. I think in the end, you know, as parents, we get sort of stuck in this idea that it's our job to make sure this all goes smoothly. But eventually, this tears me up. Eventually, our kids grow up, right? You know, and eventually they become the ones who are responsible for their own advocacy. And if we don't start fostering that young, and we're not there all day long with them, right? So if my sons are in a classroom and they need one of their accommodations, they need to be able to ask for that. Right. And I think knowing the team and feeling comfortable with the team, understanding what's in your IEP is a really huge way for kids to start just simply asking for what they need. And it's hard. It's not always easy, you know, especially when you have a child who may have a behavior plan, sitting in those meetings and having, but we're talking about that child's behavior. And I think it's really important to note, when I talk about behavior, I don't mean like acting out. Right. I think that behavior has a function, and a lot of times kids are showing frustration, right, and it may look like a behavior issue, but I think getting at the root of that. So I always want to make sure when I'm talking about behavior, I want people to understand that I'm not saying, you know, oh, that kid who acts up. I'm talking about the things that we see around frustration, the things that we see around self-regulation and, you know, ability to sort of keep yourself together. Those are skills that some kids just really need to be taught.
Right, they need the skills to learn.
As we wrap up part two, I can't thank Amanda enough for sharing the important information she has shared with us in these last two interviews. This week, I hope you'll take action on one of the tips Amanda suggests. Do you have a support person that can attend the IEP meeting with you and take notes? Who will that person be? Write the name down. Have you watched Amanda's tips on how to organize your IEP binder? You may want to check that out. I can't wait to connect again with you guys next week, when we'll share about the after the IEP meeting and how you can stay on top of your child's IEP and goals. And what if you don't think your child's IEP is being followed? I'll see you here again next week. Bye for now.